I mean, your father should be a big part of your life, but I think compared to some other people, it's a little different, me and my father's relationship. And it's something that I hold very dear to my heart. And it's something that, I strive to just every day. And I know he's proud of me and all that stuff, but, I always got to find some motivation somewhere. And the last thing that's going to happen is me losing in front of my dad. So let's get it, bro. Come on. It ain't happening.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 38 of the Good People, Bad Intentions podcast. My name is Matthew Pine, and for today's guest, we have Jake Kelly, a professional MMA fighter making his pro debut Saturday, November 19th at the Moncton Coliseum, and that's going to be for the Fight League Atlantic 6 fight card, where he will be the main event against Nigel Croswell. Now, Jake's somebody that I've known for quite a while. I consider him a good friend. We had trained at Titans MMA together, and at that time I was doing like the boxing program, and he was doing MMA and all the other programs, but also would come into the boxing program. And, we had a lot of opportunities to talk about, life, talk about boxing, mixed martial arts, and I know he has a great mind and a great aptitude for this, but more so than that, he is a good fighter. If you've ever watched any of his fights, he actually fought at FLA 1. That was his previous fight. He's somebody that's a finisher. He can, finish via submission by KO, by TKO. So he has a lot of different tools for his arsenal, really well-rounded person. And now he's fighting at Tower 1 in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. And that's headed by Gavin Tucker, UFC fighter. And more so than just a UFC fighter, he's somebody that's a maestro of many different things. There's many different avenues that Gavin could go through as far as career-wise. But he sticks with fighting in the discipline of all disciplines, and that's really respectful. So I think he's under really great guidance and tutelage, and I'm really excited to have a conversation with him because I haven't talked to him for a while. So I was like, hey, let's just make it a podcast and talk about his debut. So without further ado, here's Jake Kelly. Hello, Jake. Welcome.
How you doing, Matt? I appreciate you having me on, my friend.
How does it feel to be finally making your pro debut?
Man, it's been a long time coming. I think that's like the biggest one that, I set out on this journey back in 2018. And, beyond just trying to get the experience and develop the skills, COVID happened, put a delay on my pro debut. Then I was actually supposed to have a pro debut within that time of COVID, 2020-ish. There were some financial issues and some I would say medical issues that were just like with the requirements for the medicals for that fight that kind of fell off. So, I know people like to say everything happens for a reason. So a couple years later, here we are ready to go a week out right now from week out from the weigh-ins right now.
And you're training at Tower One in Dartmouth with Gavin Tucker and a bunch of the other guys that we both have trained with at Titans in the past. And what I'm just curious is, Jake, you're kind of one of those newer MMA fighters who had an amateur career, because a lot of the MMA fighters that you work with, they've had only the option to start as a pro. And I'm just curious, from your experience, what has fighting as an amateur now going to your pro debut, do you see anything that's benefited you as a fighter going into it compared to if you were to make your debut now for the first time?
It's just at one point there is just something to say for experience, whether that is pro or amateur. But the nice thing about amateur is that, none of us are getting paid. None of us are, doing this for a living at that point in your career. So the refs are maybe a little bit quicker to stop fights. Maybe they're just like a little quicker to maybe even interfere in a submission hold before the guy even taps, but they understand that like this might be a little bit dangerous. Maybe we should stop it here, right? And on top of it, you have a little bit more padding on the gloves. You're changing the rule set to be a little bit more safe. Mm-hmm. So like obviously in amateur, there's no knees to the head and there's no elbows to the head. I think that one's been played around with a little bit because I've been called for throwing an elbow to the body in one of my fights, but then in other fights I've seen people throw elbows to the body a whole bunch. But also I think different provinces have different rule sets as well, so that makes a big difference. But at the end of the day, again, it's like, if you're not getting paid and you're not pursuing this as a career, we don't really want people walking around with giant scars on their eyebrows because they got smacked with an elbow, and I understand that. At the same time, there's a little bit of the weirdness with the amateur rule set when it comes to ground and pound. You have to have three or more fights. Both opponents have to have three or more fights to establish ground and pound in the rule set. And I feel like that is, it almost penalizes the grappler and benefit, or more the wrestler, and it benefits the grappler, and it creates an unrealistic perspective of the sport. Because unless you're planning on just being an amateur, and even then you're going to have to switch over to ground and pound at one point. So you can't just sit guard and hold on to a guy and think that you're going to throw up triangles and arm bars and stuff like that from your back, unless you're like really high level jiu-jitsu. If that's your game, that's your game. But it creates an unrealistic perspective for fighters that think that like, oh, I can use my jiu-jitsu off my back. It's like, if you got a good strong wrestler on you who's got a little bit of submission defense, not really. It's going to be a hard go. You're going to get smacked up pretty hard, and then you're going to end up kind of drifting off and just thinking about trying to not get punched and try to stand back up. So it is one of those things that, like, there's a benefit, but there's also a little bit of things that need to be worked on, I think, in my perspective. Personally, again, my last two MMA fights, actually, yeah, have had ground and pound. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Last two MMA fights I've had ground and pound. And again, it makes all the difference in the world. You know, it creates more damage. It creates more perspective for the guy on bottom to be a little bit more wary about going down there, because they can't just play their game. They have to address that this guy's going to have offense on the top, and he's not just going to hold me. He's going to be beating me up.
And I'm just curious, were you training kind of pro rules from the get-go as you've been training mixed martial arts, or did you have to, with your camps in the past, have to be wary about the fact that there was a different rule set?
So it's like a, especially when we were like getting ready for amateur fights, if we were in camp, we practiced the rule set that we were going to be competing in, no different than in when I took a kickboxing fight. I wasn't taking people down with singles and doubles. I was using foot sweeps and trips, which are legal in kickboxing, so those I can work on. But just like if I was getting ready for an amateur fight right now, I wouldn't be working the elbows like I've been working for this last camp. I wouldn't be throwing and showing the knees to the head that I've been doing in this camp, right? Because that's the rule set I'm going to be functioning in. No different than I'm not going to be training 5-minute rounds for an amateur fight when the rounds are 3 minutes. Right, we have a whole bunch of people now that like had to, you know, because I'm fighting and fighting in a 5-minute rule set, we had to do rounds in 5 minutes. Well, these guys don't fight 5-minute rounds, but because I'm training for them, everybody sort of has to have that experience now. So it depends. Like, I know we got a couple of guys in hopefully coming up, not sure about dates 100%, but we got a couple of guys making their amateur debuts in MMA, and I think even coming up in kickboxing as well. So we will only be doing 3-minute rounds. Like, that's just what it is. Like, we have to make sure these guys are ready for the time that they're slated for. So, yeah, it depends on what you're getting ready for. And outside of camp, no. Outside of camp, if no one's got a fight coming up, then we have our amateurs working on elbows. We let them know that, hey, knees can come up to the face here. And then also we have our amateurs, when there's no one fighting, we have them throw ground and pound and show ground and pound, because are we really training to be amateurs, or are we training to be full-on pro fighters? And, I mean, when people come to into the gym and want to learn MMA, they don't want to learn amateur MMA. They want to learn straight up how to do professional MMA. So, and it also goes into the rule set when you talk about amateur MMA in context of submissions, because in amateur MMA, there's no twisting foot locks. I can't do any heel hooks. Toe holds are legal. But it's like certain submissions with the legs aren't legal. Neck cranks are illegal. Or spine manipulations are illegal. So the twister can openers, I think, have been called in the past. So again, like, we're not going to run an MMA class and not show these techniques. It's like that we're restricting our students. So again, it depends on the context. But at the same time, most of the time, if you're doing our MMA class, we're showing you how to be a pro MMA fighter.
And I'm just curious about the programming for this camp. I mean, are you working on the separate disciplines by themselves, or are you trying to kind of incorporate everything into your workouts?
A bit of both. A lot of it, especially where I have the, you know, mastermind Gavin Tucker on my corner, and he just puts so much effort and so much thought into it, that, you know, if we're, again, like for this camp, if I'm doing a boxing class, there is an element of MMA in there. If I'm doing a kickboxing class, we're working on a little bit of a engaging, especially if it's like a Muay Thai class and we're engaging in the clinch. Well, I can work on all that Muay Thai stuff, the whole eight limb striking with elbows and knees and then breaking off into punches. But I also have to be wary of the fact that there's going to be takedowns in there. People might just, when I clinch them, might just drop on my legs. So I got to be ready to sprawl. I have the option of going for a leg, pinning them against the wall, diving in on a double. So these are all things that, like, in the camp we would be working on. Outside of camp, if I'm doing a boxing class, I'm working on my boxing. Because that's where we level up. Right now, I should be more focused on like sharpening my skills and not adding and developing new ones. I need to have the skills that are going to win me this fight coming up, right? So, and making sure they're at the, you know, razor's edge of quality, right?
And I wanted to kind of reflect, I know it's been a while since you last competed. The last fight was against Corey Forsythe for the FLA one. Was that correct?
Yep.
Okay. And by the way, one thing that I really love about your style that you displayed in that fight is your excellent wrestling. You know, I believe you were able to, were you suplexing?
There was a thought of a suplex. Okay. It's like, it wasn't a true to God suplex. It was more of just kind of like a mat return that turned into a little bit more high amplitude. Okay. In reality, all I really needed to do was kind of hug onto him and bump my hips in, and he would have kind of just rotated. Mm-hmm. But in the moment with the adrenaline, it kind of like turned into like this big lift. And I was like, oh, you know, again, sometimes you can get carried away a little bit. And in reality, I probably wasted a little bit of energy, but I felt like it was worth it at the time. And it looks good for the highlight reel, I guess, you know.
I even saw, was it a roll as well? You were able to, I don't see rolls that much in MMA. And I was like, oh, man, I saw a roll in there.
Yeah, that was more of a defensive move at that point. Yep. He caught me in a Kimura.
Yep.
And it was a little bit one of those ones where you're kind of like, I got to get out of this. Like, this is not good. And again, like he did a good job in that moment because, again, he got me off of him and he got us to stand up for a moment. And then, I'll be honest, the biggest part of that was me catching his leg. So he had my arm and he had it isolated. I was able to grab the inner part of my thigh. So it wasn't pulling the arm behind my back, but he still had a very tight grip and it was going to be very hard for me to break. And eventually he would have found a way to pull that arm out from under me and be able to crank on my shoulder. But where I was able to hold on to that leg, it kept me really close to him. So it wasn't, he wasn't able to find the leverage and the angle to really put the arm behind my back. And then at that point, it's like, I'm not just going to keep doing this do-si-do running around in circles. I got to find a way to get out. And the roll just seemed natural at that point. It's not even something I think I really practiced all that much. It just, I knew that if I was in a Kimura on the ground, I could still roll out of it. Like, I knew that it was a concept. And in that moment, it kind of just felt right. And again, like, it actually even put me in a dominant position where I actually locked up a shallow darse. I locked up a shallow darse. I still remember my coach at the time, Pete Martel, telling me that that's in. And in the moment, with the sweat, with the way that I locked it up, it wasn't deep enough for me to try to submit a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with it. So I just used it to kind of take a couple of breaths and then reestablish my position. And I think we stood up from there, and I actually landed a head kick off of that, I think. But Corey's always one of those guys. I got, you know, as we fought twice, there's a little bit of a rivalry there, you could say. But every time I've engaged with them outside of a fighting context, we've always had a very pleasant conversation. And I got a lot of respect for that guy. That guy is tough as nails.
He is.
That guy's a beast. And I told him after that fight, I said, you're always a scary fight, man. Because you know it's just not going to be easy going. You're just going to have to either work your ass off or get ready for a rough and tumble scrap.
Your last three fights have all been finishes. You know, I think you're establishing yourself, you establish yourself as a fighter, someone who's able to finish the fight. But you know, it has been a while, and I know you're somebody that's always developing your skills and improving as a martial artist, as a fighter. How do you see yourself now compared to when you last wrote? Like, do you see many changes in your game, and what are you looking forward to showing, come fight night?
One of the things I pride myself on is being well-rounded. So it's not that I can't be in any position and still be dangerous. I am dangerous in all positions, whether I'm on my back, whether I'm on up against the cage, whether I'm at range and at distance. I like to be, there's that saying, jack of all trades is better than a master of, let me fix that one. A jack of all trades, still a bat better than a master of one. I'm messing that one up horribly, but it's that concept, right? So I'd like to have kind of not a shallow understanding of everything, but a educated repertoire and toolkit in each position where I'm not going to be useless in one area because I didn't work on it, you know? And there are people that are like that. There are people in the game that are at the highest level that just are striking specialists, mm-hmm. or that are grappling specialists, and they become world champions with that. But what are the days that you walk in there and you just have a off night and you're striking, or the guy's doing something that's not really comfortable for you? He's maintaining range at a different angle, and you're just like, my striking's not going to work here. Well, if you're just a specialist, you're going to be forced to play that game with him, and it could turn out really poorly for you. In a context of how I like to have it is, yes, I'm going to try to kickbox a guy, but maybe his kickboxing is better than mine. Well, I know that I got some pretty good boxing in my back pocket, so if I can put pressure on him and close that range, then my boxing will show. Same concept. He's a better boxer and kickboxer than me. I can close that range and go to the clinch. From there, on and on, keep going down the list of areas that I can been working on, and then we'll find a position where I find myself. This is where I'm going to have my success. And I can tell you to the biggest one, I think, that in my career where it was present was when I fought Corey Verne.
Mm-hmm.
I could have stood up and probably kickboxed him and probably still had a lot of success, but I felt very uncomfortable with the aggression he came at me with. He was like almost reckless in his pursuit of the striking. And I was like, okay, well, if you're going to be like that, I can just kind of duck under and take you down. So I found the path of least resistance. I found that, okay, if I get on top, I can dominate this guy. And it ended up winning me the fight. And I remember after coming back from the first round, Gavin was in my corner. He says, all the kickboxing we worked on, all the striking, forget about it. You're going to go out there and take him down in this round. And he made me repeat it to him. I got into the next round. I made him think a little bit of kickboxing, got a little bit of stuff off. He came in with some big shots, and I got underneath him and I took him down, and that ended up leading me to the finish. So just having that well-roundedness again, it's like, and I also, you said my last three fights are finishes. All my fights are finishes.
Mm-hmm.
All five of my wins, yes, have been by finish. So it is 100% finishing rate. And I, the key thing that I think that I've kind of pulled away from my experiences in that is not forcing it. Like, just letting it develop, letting it happen. You know, the fight is the fight. You know, if I start looking for something and going for it, you can kind of get a little bit, let that tunnel vision, and you don't see other things that are presenting themselves, other mistakes, and you don't realize the mistakes that you're making because you just want to get them. It's like, no, just let it happen. Work on the skills that you've been working on in camp, and let the effort you've put in speak for itself.
You spoke about a lot of great things. I love what you were talking about being well-rounded. I do describe yourself as a well-rounded mixed martial artist, but I like what kind of implications it has, because I think so many times, as me as a fan watching MMA, you'll see somebody who is, this happens all the time, you'll see a really great striker go against somebody with maybe a wrestling pedigree or a submission expert, and all of a sudden, we were thinking that the striker was going to have a lot of success in the feet, but that fear of that takedown, that fear of going into that uncomfortable place, maybe we don't have to describe it as fear, but maybe just that the fact that they're anticipating something like a shoot or a takedown, it really mitigates a lot of those specializations, being just a specialized fighter. And I like how you were talking about how you try to have a well-rounded game, and you know that you try to not necessarily go full in depth with one thing, but have a working ability with that. I think that's great that you described that. And I know just from us talking, you know, at the gym at Titans and everything, I mean, we've talked about your past opponents and, you know, the toughness that your past opponents have had. And I could see where if you didn't have the mentality that you have now, where you're just like, I'm going to finish them in this particular way, that, you know, there could have been some obstacles that way. So I love your approach to a fight where you're not kind of forcing things, and you're just kind of going with this, with stuff, because, it's clearly shown in the different types of finishes that you have. I appreciate you bringing up the 100% finish rate, cause that's 100% true. 100% finish rate. And
not my wins. I have a loss on my amateur record. Not all my fights.
By decision.
It's there, you know? Again, it's hilarious. I actually, you know, I've never actually talked to Coria Forsyth about this, but it's almost like you can't find any evidence of that fight. It's kind of comical. There's pictures. You can find pictures here and there of us kind of scrapping it out. Yep. But it was it's hilarious because all my fights have been recorded. There's video of most of my fights except for that one. And that was the one that I, you know, he won an amateur title at 135 against me in that one. And, you know, that's like one of those ones that like really stuck with me. And I learned a lot of my, you know, I learned a lot of lessons from that one. Right. You know, it's like kind of comical that it's like, that's my one loss and you can't find any. I was like, did it really happen? Like, you know, like, but it did. I can guarantee you the people in the audience knew that me and Corey, I basically had a bar fight in the middle of a freaking cage. We scrapped it out. It was a bit of a barn burner. So, it's funny that I just don't like, I have memories of it, but like how I remember it might've not been the way that it actually turned out. And it was kind of comical. Cause I remember them even telling the audience at the beginning of the event, there's no recordings of this video. If we see a phone, we will escort you out of the venue and stuff like that.
Wow.
And I don't even think that might even been something happened with their, like some technical issues, but usually the commission records the events anyways.
Yeah.
Just in case things happen, just in case if there's like something happens to a fighter, if there's an issue in rules and stuff like that, right? If there was a foul. So there is a video somewhere. It's just that we can't get our hands on it, which I find just very, very comical.
So is it safe to say that you've been able to speak after these fights with Corey and you're on good terms on that way?
Oh, yes. No. Corey's a fantastic guy. I think very highly of him. And again, as a competitor as well, you know. I know he hasn't had the best luck of recent in his past few fights. Mm-hmm. But that guy's still a dog. I still think that, you know, people who... If he signs another contract and he gets back in there, it's like, I got a message for you guys. If you think it's going to be easy, it ain't. Even though in his last one, he got a quick one out of there. But, you know, that's the sport we also compete in, right? Sometimes you zigged when you should have zagged, right? But no, I was like, when I fought Corey Vern, he was like the co-main or maybe the one before that. So we had a big old chat then. I've seen him at other fight promotions, just like being in the crowd. It's always good to see him. You know, again, it's like we talked about this before. Your podcast name is just like almost like the best way to represent all the fighting community, right? We're all good people. We're all very, you know, for the most part, you know,
yes.
Like there's a percentage of people that are just like everywhere in the world. But for the most part, we're all good people. It's just that every once in a while, we have some bad intentions behind us, right?
Yeah, I appreciate the recognition. That's the main thing with this podcast. We're just trying to kind of show a little bit of, you know, what the fighter's going through as far as their everyday life and the preparation for their fights, but also showing them, you know, because of the fact that when they are shown to the public, they're doing things that we don't normally do. They're fighting, you know, people, and we don't give the recognition. I think fighters don't get the recognition of how much of a good person they are, because behind the scenes, you know, after the fight, they're talking with their opponent. They're talking about, hey, you could have beat me this way better, you know, this type of thing. You're sharing tips, and like, there's no other real, besides maybe, you know, another combat sport or anything like that. There's not really a lot of parallels in life with what you guys go through. And I wanted to kind of shift things, because I know we've known each other for quite a while, and I know a little bit about your story and everything like that, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of share it, because we're both in Nova Scotia, but you've kind of had a life where you've been in Newfoundland and I believe in New Brunswick, and you've kind of been all over the place. And I understand that your father had started you. Mm-hmm. Was it with jiu-jitsu at the time? Yeah.
So if you want I'll give you a long story with a little bit of a fast forward.
Yes, please.
So when I was really young, it was just my dad and my brother, and we were just like in the gi and him just showing us punches and stuff like that. And I mean, I was small, like six or something like that. And I don't consider that training. I was too young. I wasn't really learning anything. But then when I turned, that was actually back when we were in Labrador. So my father was former RCMP, so he was stationed all over. If you want the whole thing, I was born in Regina, Saskatchewan, when my dad was training recruits for the RCMP at Depot.
Okay.
When I was a year and a half, I moved to Newfoundland, and that's why, you know, I remember nothing and have no recollection of Saskatchewan. I'm sure it was lovely, but it's just, I have no recollection of it. So home for me has always been Cornerbrook, Newfoundland. And I grew up for the first 4 years of my life there. Then we moved to Labrador. That's where my dad kind of started introducing us to martial arts. Then when I moved back to Cornerbrook, there was a Japanese jiu-jitsu or a Kanryu jiu-jitsu gym that was there. And my dad thought it was a great idea for me, my brother, and him to all start at white belts together. My father at the time having self-defense background in policing. Before that, he had gotten a karate black belt when he was younger, and then a taekwondo black belt as well. And then after that, he started learning grappling with, like, through judo, through different jiu-jitsu clubs, getting the opportunity to work with Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys at the time, which was, it was still kind of, you couldn't really find it around all that often. And my dad developed an opinion. He says, it doesn't matter what you train, as long as it works. So if it's a technique that can be useful, he says, I'll adapt it and work it into my repertoire. Very open-minded in that aspect, and it's washed off on me. It's like, I don't care where it comes from, as long as it works. So when I was eight, I started doing this kind of training, and then there was a little bit of a hiatus. The club kind of fell apart at one point. The instructors, there was two instructors, and one of them was working in the mainland at the time, and the other one was raising two kids and running a B&B. So she had a lot on her plate, trying to run the club as well. At one point, they just had to call it quits at that point. I kind of took a hiatus from 8 till 12, and that's when I watched my first UFC fight, Anderson Silva versus Sandman Irving. I can never remember his first name. And then I just watched Anderson just flatten this guy in the first round, and I was like, what is this? Like, it just blew my mind. And then started watching the other, because it was a UFC Unleashed. It wasn't an actual card. It was like the replays of the fights. And I remember just being memorized by it. I was like, this is insane, this is awesome. And I remember when my dad was watching it with me, and he looked at me and he said, so I could show you this stuff. I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, this is what I do. He said, this is what I've been doing. He says, not to this level, but like, I know and I understand what they're doing, to a point where I could give you a little bit of a fundamental base. And that was it. That's basically the end of my life, but the start of something different, right? So I was about 12, and then I was turning 13, and that's when I pulled my dad out down in the basement. We put mats down on the floor. We go out into the garage, and we put mats down on the floor. And then my mother would have to come find us, because we were there for like 3 hours just talking about different things, him breaking things down, making sure that everything was to his standard at that point. There's a size. My dad's not a small man. You know, he's, you know, I'd say above average, and at the time too, you know. So he had to put a lot of kid gloves. I was 13, like 115 pounds. So, you know, it was always a lot of that. And then eventually he started telling me, he's like, I have to work a little harder, Jake. I got to keep, you know, that's looking really good. You're catching me by surprise. And the striking started to build and all that stuff too. And it developed to a point where I was at a level where my dad said, I'm going to start training, opening up my own club. My dad opened up his own Camryu Jiu-Jitsu club. He got his black belt through conversations with the headmaster in Ontario. And he got his black belt and then opened up his own club. And that's a Newfound Defensive Arts Jiu-Jitsu out of Corner Brook, Newfoundland. It's a tattoo that's on my left pec. That's my dad's logo. It's close to my heart, literally and figuratively. And from 16 till when I turned 19, I eventually got my black belt. Before I got my black belt, I had two fights. I had my fight against Robbie Innes and then Charles Haskett. And then after that one with Charles Haskett, I ended up getting my black belt in Camryu Jiu-Jitsu. And again, that's a, you know, I don't necessarily describe myself as a Camryu Jiu-Jitsu fighter because they're not really a competitive martial art. They're a self-defense based martial arts. Why my father went in that direction because his background's policing and more self-defense. So I would introduce that, like, I am a Camryu Jiu-Jitsu black belt, but I'm not like a Camryu Jiu-Jitsu fighter. I like to kind of say MMA or freestyle fighter because I use it all. I have a blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as well. I've been working on all disciplines. I like to think equally. So, yeah, after that, I kind of had those two fights, took my first loss. I was still in, like, just out of high school at that point, and I was doing university at the time. And eventually, after studying for a while, I realized that that environment wasn't for me. And I decided to move out to Halifax and pursue this full time and dedicate myself to this sport. And that has a lot to do with Gavin Tucker. When I was 16, I met him at a wrestling tournament in St. John's, Newfoundland. And we stayed in contact through those whole years. And, you know, it's a blessing that I got the chance to meet him because I don't know where I would be right now if I didn't have that luck of the draw. Because he's definitely been a huge influence in my martial arts career and just overall a pillar of my success, I would say.
Yeah, I think of Gavin as one of the great minds of mixed martial arts right now. And I know, of course, he's also a fighter in the UFC. I'd love to see him compete again soon. But I know that he's opened up this new gym. And, you know, I'm really happy that he's kind of taken you under his wing as far as this upcoming pro debut, because I believe you're in good hands. And one thing I can really appreciate about Gavin is, and I'm sure he would say this too, but there's so many avenues that Gavin is good at and he could have gone in his life, knowing his story. I mean, he's into music, you know, then he's into like any of the disciplines himself. And I think we've talked about it before, but he could go into any of the disciplines right now, you know, but he's choosing to learn all of them and become a complete mixed martial artist. And a great mind, yeah, and strong work ethic. That's one thing that really, when I think about Gavin Tucker, I think about a strong work ethic and hashtag no excuses. Like
No,
he's.
it can be inspiring and frustrating at the same time sometimes because you're just like, how in the world do I even like touch that, like get even close to it? And that's part of the inspiration, right? It's just something to strive for. You know, it's like I know I might have a great day in practice and doing my thing and looking good and feeling good, and then Gavin looks at me and says, we're gonna go a couple rounds. I'm like, oh shit, here goes my day, you know? And again, it's not like, oh, he's gonna hurt me, or by no means is he doing that. It's just that I know that there's levels to this, and I know that you need guys pushing you. And if you're the biggest fish in a little pond, you ain't gonna get any better. But if you're a decent sized fish in a pretty decent sized pond, it's like, uh-oh, now I can keep growing. Now I can keep going. Now I can see that there's this big fish over here, and I gotta make sure that I can hold that guy off. If I can't get away from him, there are guys out there that are like this guy. There are guys out there that feel like this guy, even at my weight class, and I know that. So if I can get some things off there, if I can work on some th things there and make techniques work there, then I know that I'm developing and growing as a martial artist and as an athlete. And I know Gavin's sole desire when it comes to the gym is to do that, is to make sure that he has guys in his gym that can challenge him as well.
And I want to share a little story with Gavin, because, I mean, there's a lot of stories that I could share, but one thing that kind of came to mind when we were talking about him is, you know, all of us have trained at Titans before in the past, and that's where I met you and everything like that. I remember I was in the boxing program, so, you know, we were kind of separate from the mixed martial arts and the jiu-jitsu people, and, you know, the warm-up oftentimes we'd be skipping. And, you know, I would skip for, this was probably like 2 years or so, in front of Gavin and everybody else. And I would see them and I was feeling pretty good. Like, I was like, you know what, I'm getting my coordination and everything like that. And I was like, you know, I never see Gavin like skipping that much, like when I'm there or whatever. And I remember one time he took out the skipping rope, and the amount of tricks that guy knew skipping. I mean, I understand, you know, he's worked a lot with Tyson Cave, et cetera, other established boxers in the area. But seeing that one element, like that one element skipping and what he was able to do, I was like, okay, he has a very wide, diverse, deep, strong understanding of many aspects of fitness, mixed martial arts, et cetera.
I question how he keeps it all in his head.
Yeah.
Like, I question, I'm just like, where is this stored? Because then it's also, again, like you also talk to him about music, and it's like he has a whole different set of opinions and concepts and perspectives. He's a classically trained musician. Like, he went to university for a while to be a musician at St. FX. Like, this guy, again, it's like, but again, that's just like a part of what makes him special, what makes him such a valued part of the MMA community in my mind. It's just like and people don't really know. This is the crazy part.
Yeah.
Is people don't really know, because he does keep it a little bit close, yep, to the chest. He shares this with a select few of people because he cares for those people.
Yep.
Right. And he talks about it all the time. He's posting little stories about him training and stuff like that. And people are all always messaging him and stuff like that. And they're like, what are you doing here? And he's like, doing here? And he's like, come over and find out, right? You know, it's like, this is what you know, if you want to get, you know, the benefit of his time and his effort, you got to show up and you got to be there. And it's, again, I'm just, you know, I think honestly, I'm blessed to have met him. Again, I met him when I was 16. So that's more than 10 years ago now. And I wasn't training with him for that whole time, but just being in contact with him was just something that, you know, I definitely value. And again, he didn't need to do that to me. I was some, you know, weekend martial artist going to a grappling tournament that he had happened to be at because he was visiting home and playing some music for some friends. And he saw me perform, he saw me grapple, and he came up to me and says, you do more than just grappling, don't you? And I said, yeah. I said, I've been training martial arts of like everything since I was like 13 years old. Seriously, since I was 13 years old. And he said, if you're looking for your first fight when you turn 19, give me a message and I'll get you in contact with the right people. And that was the start of it all, kind of thing. So yes, it's one of those things that, and again, I think as time goes on, and when, you know, again, this is going to be our third fighter coming out of Tower One, and I think as our reputation builds and our performances start to show in the bigger scenes and other fighters, and again, we got some debuts planned coming up, I think you're going to see more and more the value, and you're going to see more and more people realize that it's like, maybe we need to go over here. Maybe we need to kind of step up and try this gym out and see what it's like these guys are doing, because they're doing something right. And that has a lot to credit with, or completely has all the credit goes to Gavin Tucker. Again, the way he just organizes everything, the way that he's honestly thinking about not just working and sweating, but how do we make our sweat value? Like, how do we get value out of our training? We need to all still work hard. But if you're just sweating for sweating's sake, where are you developing, right? You know, it's, again, it can be overwhelming at times. And then other times you're just like, hell yeah, let's get this.
I really appreciate you sharing that, because I know that, you know, you have a strong connection with Gavin, and, you know, he's, you've paid a lot of respect to him just there, showing that, you know, he's a big part of, you know, how you got here and how you've been going about things for the last, 10 years, you said, or so?
Well, I've known him for 10 years. The last training with him for the last, I moved here in 2018. Okay. And again, he's the one that pulled me out here, because there was a point in my life where I was like, I know I want to pursue this sport, but is this the right place, or is this the right place? I had a coach in PEI that was kind of in my ear, kind of wanted me to kind of come out and help his guys, and he would work with me as well. And then there was also another thought where I was like, do I just kind of jump out to Montreal and see what's out there and TriStar and see how I make it out there? And it was actually while Gavin was doing a seminar in Newfoundland, actually in my hometown of Cornerbrook. And I sat him down and I had this conversation with him. And he sat down with me and he says, Jake, I'll be honest with you. He says, you know, PEI wouldn't be a bad idea. He says, you might be a little bit more used to that smaller city kind of vibe. He says, you might find in Montreal that you'll get lost in the shuffle, because it's a big gym with a lot of fighters. And then he says, Titans, man, he says, it's just a good environment. And he says, I'll part of it too. He says, I'll be there keeping my eye on you and helping you out. And again, that was one of the big ones where I was like, all right, this is the guy, you know, I owe a lot of things to him. And I feel like I know Gavin would decline that as much as I'm saying that I do. But I feel that, like, he has done so much for me and helped me out in so many ways that I just knew in that moment. He says, I think Titans and Halifax is the right place for you. And I'm so grateful that I moved out here. It's been a wild ride so far, and I'm looking forward to the next however many years, you know, and however this journey, or wherever this journey takes me.
And we talked a little bit about kind of the nomadic lifestyle that you must have had growing up, as far as you were going from one place to another place, you know, with your father being a former RCMP. And I'm just curious, like, when it comes to home, do you usually consider Newfoundland to be where you're? Okay.
Yes, especially again in concept, because again, so like, born in Saskatchewan, don't really, you know, have any ties there. That's, I think, the biggest one. Moved to Newfoundland. That's where I spent most of my life. Then we moved to Labrador for a bit. So there, when I tell people I'm from Newfoundland, I will also sometimes include Newfoundland and Labrador, because I lived 3 years there. A very small community of Forto, Labrador. My dad was, for a minute there, was the police officer in that community.
Okay.
That was like 3 years of my life. Then we moved back to Cornerbrook, Newfoundland. That's where we moved back there. And I spent the majority of my elementary school, all of my junior high, and all of my high school there. So that's home. That's just where I've spent. Now, throughout that, and again, this is also part of the little bit of a special thing where I'm doing this pro debut in Moncton, is my dad's originally from Moncton. Mm-hmm. My dad was born in Moncton, but was raised in Shediac, New Brunswick, which is just like 20 minutes outside mm-hmm. of Moncton. And again, being able to, well, since I was born, every summer, we would visit his family. We would go back to Moncton, whether that was for 2 weeks in the summer or the whole summer. So that's always been the kind of like my second home, of like Shediac primarily, but Moncton as well is also kind of grouped in there. We spent a lot of time in Moncton and even in Dieppe as well. And I do have a strong connection. I still have family. All my dad's family is out there as well. So it's a special place for me to kind of be making my pro debut in reality. And then I also kind of now saying where I've been here in Halifax for so long, this is a very, you know, I love this city. The province is beautiful. I haven't gotten around and explored it as much maybe as I would like to at times, because I'm just so dedicated to, if I'm not home and at work, I'm training. So it's like not a crazy amount of time. And then when I have the time to do something, I'm just exhausted. So it's like, you know, I kind of just stay home and hang out and talk to some friends and play some video games. But again, I could kind of say this a little bit of a joke, and I, by no means is it a nickname by any means, but you can almost kind of think of me as an Atlantic Canadian kid, because I've been all over Atlantic Canada. And it's, again, I've been around, I'm pretty sure that I've only not been to the territories. Like, we've traveled a fair bit around Canada, but my whole life has been in Atlantic Canada. I've been to camping in PEI, here in Halifax now. Again, it's like I went to school, of all things, and again, it's not part of Atlantic Canada, but I used to go to school in Quebec when I was living in Labrador because my parents wanted me to still learn French.
Okay.
Now that's all gone.
Okay.
I'm nowhere near bilingual anymore, but it's just still like there was a thought there that again, I've been blessed to kind of see this country in a different light, especially where I talk to a lot of people that who travel around Canada, and they always say the same thing. I haven't been to Newfoundland yet. I'm like, well, you're probably missing the one of the nicest spots, to be honest with you. It's like in certain times of the year, like I don't think you can beat the scenery in Newfoundland. It's beautiful, man. Beautiful.
And I wanted, because you brought up the fact that your father was basically the policeman for a community in Labrador. What is it like being the son of somebody who is the policeman? Like, what was that like growing up?
It's hard to say again. Like my brother probably has a different perspective. My sister probably has a different perspective. But I always loved it. I always thought it was just super cool. Like I always felt like, And again, this is probably more of when I was younger. But and again, because I know the reality of it now, police officers are just people. Like that's just as they're just as honest day of work as they're trying to do as anybody else, and they just happen to be kind of protecting and serving. I always thought it was super cool. I almost felt like my dad was like a superhero all the time, And I know everybody's dad is a superhero, right? Kind of, especially when they're that age. But again, like he was going out and he was, chasing bad guys, confiscating drugs. It's like this is things. And again, the reality of it, he was probably just in the office hanging out. But it's like in my head at the time, it was always something that I always kind of respected. And there was a period of my time where I was like thinking that I was going to be a police officer, right? So that changed. Just realizing the actual what the job actually entails, because again, it's not all sunshine and rainbows and car chases. It's it's a, there's paperwork, there's politics, and it's just like everywhere, right? And there's coworkers, and there's some things to it that not a lot of people understand, and especially when I hear people complaining about here police officers, it makes me laugh because I'm like, they talk a little bit of shit, and oh, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to
No, you
swear on
can.
this.
You
I'm
can.
sorry.
You good.
All right, okay, good. But like people talk a little bit, and then I'm just like, they're like, "What do you think, Jake?" And I'm just like, "Well, my dad's a police officer." And they just go, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And I'm like, "No, don't worry about it. It wasn't my dad you're talking crap about, so it doesn't matter to me, right?" But at the same time, it's like my respect and my manners and my demeanor around police officer is different. Like a lot of people get stiff around police officers, or people get kind of like bitter around police officers, and I just know they're just trying to do their job. They're just trying to do the best they can. They're not going to be perfect. And I also know, I'm confident in saying this, that my dad was a, part of that 1% of police officers who were just fantastic at their job. I'm confident in saying that, based off of other police officers talking to me about my father. So it is one of those things that, like, I do have a different perspective on it. But at the same time, I do understand people's frustration with policing, And me and my dad have had hours upon hours of conversation of what is the things we need to do to kind of create a better understanding and a better system. But at the end of the day, it's just we have no control over it. It's all hypotheticals, and that's a conversation for him because he's the expert in that. But yeah, as to answer your question, in the small community. In a small community, anyways, everyone knows your business, right? So it's like now you're just like identified as the cop's son, right? And again, I never thought it was anything big, but I knew maybe I didn't get, and it's probably just completely irrational, but kids probably didn't pick on me as much as maybe they picked on the next kid. Or I remember no one ever told me, like, you hear that, my dad can beat up your dad. And I'm like, my dad can arrest your dad. So, it's like, I kind of win that veto right
Yeah.
there. It's like, I got a little cheat card coming out from behind here.
I was just thinking, like, obviously you spoke about how you thought about being a police officer, you're not a police officer, but sometimes police have to restrain people, and I'm just thinking about you in the cage. You're putting somebody down, you're stopping them from doing what they got to do, and you're submitting them. And I mean, And I just love how the connection that, you know, with your father and everything that he had done for you, how you have been able to, you know, grow that passion. And now you're looking at doing it as a professional, you know, like, you know, you were talking about how when you were 13 years old, you were, you know, in the basement and having those conversations and other things and training for extended periods of time. I'm just really glad that you've been able to keep up with it, because, you know, that's something. Looking at your record, you did your first amateur fight in 2015. So yep. That was 7 years yep. ago. So you've been 7 years plus in this game, and now you're finally making your debut. And that's why I'm so excited for you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that a lot. I know that, with, like, especially when it comes to my father, like, when I told him that I wanted to do this and I wanted to fight, he kind of would joke around. He says, I wish when you were younger, I would have put you in ballet instead. Because, again, like, he's like, you took it. He said, and again, out of three kids, I'm the only one that really pursued martial arts. Mm-hmm. So he was, like, super passionate about that, because he's like, finally, I can share this with someone in my family, right? He's like, no one else trains martial arts in our family. So it's me and my dad. And it was something that I think that really, like, inspired him to kind of, like, because dad said that, he says, in all of his students and all of his teachings, his goal isn't to train you in martial arts. He's to train you to be better than he was. He wants you to develop the habits that maybe he didn't address when he was young, still developing his techniques and stuff like that. So he's always had that goal. And, you know, he said that at one point, he says, Jake, it's like, you're a handful when I was, you know, 17 years old. So that was something that I, you know, keep close to my heart, is very dear to me, you know, especially whereas, like, my father being the catalyst to this whole thing. But again, I think at some points he thinks I took it a little too far. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, he says, I'm happy you enjoy it. I'm happy that you chose to be so passionate about this. But at the same time, it's like, now he has to, you know, he's coming out to the fights in a week okay. here now. And he's been to all my MMA fights. And he coached me for my first three, right? He was in my corner. And I still remember that moment. It was like my first MMA fight. And I'm sitting in the back room thinking to myself, what in the hell am I doing? This is crazy, man. And I'm like getting wrapped up and they're putting the gloves on me. And I'm just like, holy shit, this is real now, right? You know, it kind of like blows your mind in that moment. And I'm like, okay, I know what I got to do. I got to look to my rock. I got to look to my master, my sensei, and my father. And I look over, and he's more terrified than I am. And I'm just like, oh, shit. Like, here we go. Like, oh, God damn it. Like, this is wild for both of us. And again, like, he stuck through it with me, though. He sat on the side of the cage and shouted out what he could and helped me where he can and was there for me on both my wins and also was consoling me in my first loss. So again, it's like, I especially where this is the path that I've chose, it's like, I don't think I could have got lucked out any better, to be honest. You know, again, it's one thing for, you know, as great of a martial artist my father is, the quality of also of just him being there. The guy never missed a wrestling tournament. The guy never missed a basketball game. And as much as he's, you know, my father and my parent and all that stuff, I talk to him almost every day. Like, that guy is also close to probably my best friend, right? You know, it's, I don't want to get emotional now, but like, he's definitely, I mean, your father should be a big part of your life, but I think compared to some other people, it's a little different, me and my father's relationship. And it's something that I hold very dear to my heart. And it's something that, you know, I strive to just every day, and I know he's proud of me and all that stuff, but you know, I always got to find some motivation somewhere. And the last thing that's going to happen is me losing in front of my dad. So let's get it, bro. Come on. It ain't happening. And I also have some empathy here, too, for my opponent and Nigel Crosswell. We haven't actually mentioned him okay. at this point. But he's also trained by his father. His dad is also one of his instructors. And I'm pretty sure his dad will be in his corner coming up. And I hate to do it to him, but, you know, it's, you know, he's going to have to watch his son get beat up on in a week's time. So here we go.
And let's get into it. Your upcoming fight, you're going against Nigel Crosswell. I was able to watch some tape with him. Seems to have kind of a traditional martial arts background. He's got some dynamic kicks. Looks like he's in really good shape. What is your kind of your assessment of him as a fighter going into this fight?
Man, you have to have this mindset and every time you go in. But one of the things that I truly believe is this is the best fighter that I've walked in there with. The guy's got more experience than I do. He's got actually a larger amateur record than I do. I'm not sure about his actual record. I can't say it off the top of my head, but I know he's got, you know, at least 15 fights, I think. So maybe even, and then he's got his one pro loss on his record. And yeah, I'm just ready to showcase what I have, really, is the big thing. I've always had the mindset it doesn't really matter who I'm fighting, like the name on the contract. It's like, we have to address his skills. We have to look at the things that he's going to be using to our best of our ability, and then address them in my game and find the answers that we're going to use. But at the same time, I can't control what he is. I can't control what kind of shape he's in. I can't control how hard he's going to hit. All I can do is control the things that I have control over, which is what food I'm putting in my body, how much I'm training, how I'm taking care of myself, the effort I'm putting in, the mindset that I have, the self-talk that I'm giving myself. Like, these are the things that I have control over. So that's what I'm going to focus on. And I'm telling him, man, it's like, I haven't had a camp like this before. Just how structured it was, how disciplined I've been, and the effort that I've put out. And I know that when the time comes, I'm going to show up and I'm going to perform to my abilities. And just being free and letting the work express itself. Not that it's going to be a tough fight. I'm expecting 3 rounds of a friggin' war, and we're going to get at it. But in the end of the day, I feel like I'm going to have my hand raised. Whether that's knockout, TKO, submission, decision, it doesn't matter to me. I'm coming out with my hand raised. And again, I hope he's getting ready, right? If he thinks that I'm just some young man from Cornerbrook, Newfoundland, that is just going to be a tough Newfie, I ain't that, man. I'm not that. I'm a lot more than that. I got a lot of skills. I've been doing this for a long time. And I can appreciate that everybody has the right and the opportunity to win. But if you're in there with me, after you get out of there with me, you're going to know that you were in a fist fight, and I'm coming for you.
I appreciate that you kind of had that juxtaposition right there where you're talking about appreciating the fact that his father trains him, and you're able to kind of reflect that. But then we're also talking about business here, and you know what your intentions are as far as this upcoming fight. I guess what I would want to ask too is, you're going to be fighting at Fly.
Yep.
And have you ever fought at flyweight before, or were you always a little bit higher?
I fought at bantamweight for the most, mm-hmm. and my last fight was actually a catchweight of 130. Okay. So bantamweight's 135, sorry, I always use just the last two numbers. But bantamweight's 135 pounds, flyweight's 125 pounds. In an amateur context, I never felt like it was worth the squeeze at that point. I felt like a lot of guys weren't cutting as much weight anyways. And to be honest with you, I've always been the smallest guy in the room. It's one of those things that I've dealt with my whole life. It's never felt any different, really, in context. I know my power, my strength level. I know I can handle guys, you know, pretty big, pretty, you know, again.
In the 200 pounds.
It's like, that's where it gets a little dicey. You know? you get a little bit, you know, I know where I'm comfortable. Yes. And then there's also safety issues, especially when it comes to the grappling. Yep. But, you know, it's just something in the amateur scene, as I just didn't feel like I should kill myself to get down to a weight class that would have been a little bit more difficult than just being in shape and being healthy and eating the right food. So now that I'm making a pro debut, and I know that 25 is my correct weight class, decided to make the decision to do it. And I'm, you know, I'm on weight. I'm ready to go. You know, not on weight, but I got the cut coming up. And where I had my last one, it wasn't a large cut, but I had that experience, and I know that I can make it through, and I know that I can do this, and we're going to make the weight, right? That's just what it is. You got to be a professional about it. So coming up here now, we have the whole protocol about how do we get this weight down, and come Friday, which is a week from today, I will weigh, again, they give you the pound allowance, so like 126 pounds, that's the goal, you know?
Yeah. And do you anticipate with this, change, you know, whereas you're doing more weight cutting, are you expecting to have a little bit more of an edge come the fight, or Do you feel like in the past when you fought at the heavier weights that you might have gone against opponents who were much bigger?
I mean, I think, and again, I also actually have my kickboxing fight. Yeah. I fought at 140.
Okay.
So, like, that, there is one of those things where, and again, it's like, it's even me cutting this weight, he's taller than me. Yep. He's going to be probably pretty long. Yep. So it's like, but in my context, I never have thought that that was a disadvantage because it's something that I've dealt with my whole martial arts career. Everybody's always longer, taller, bigger than me. So I've had to adapt myself to that kind of style. I would less of think of it as an advantage and more of just like an even playing field now, you know? And again, like you can see, like I fought Corey Forsyth and he was bigger than me. You can see that guy's bigger than me. But if you watch that last fight back and you ask who is stronger, people would probably say I was stronger. But in reality, no, it's like that he could probably push more weight than I can. But it's just the way I use my leverage, the way that I'm using my technique makes it look like I have a little bit more push than I actually do. Because I don't feel, again, everyone's strong. Everybody has muscles. But how you apply those muscles and how you use those muscles within a technique is what I believe counts. So again, it's like, I'm not sure if it's going to be less of an advantage. I feel like I'm just coming into my correct weight class. I feel like now this is where I should have been for the last little while. It's just now is the time to step up and put the work in to get down there.
And the last thing, didn't feel appropriate at the time to bring it up, but you talked about your father possibly thinking about putting you in the ballet. Was that true or is that just a joke?
Oh no, he says that to people all the time. He actually says that. And again, it is a joke.
Okay.
But it's just like the way that I've taken it and the stress that I know that I've brought to him and my mother, and you know, my sister watches the fights too and stuff like that. And my brother is paying attention and stuff like that. So I know that it's not, again, it's not easy to be doing it, but I also know it's not easy on them. So I know that when he says that if he could rewind time, I'm not joking, I probably would have been put in ballet. Right? He's like, you know,
I was like, maybe
my footwork would have been crazy, bro. My footwork would have been awesome.
Yeah. You know? I was thinking you were having like, kind of like with Vasily Lomachenko, you'd have kind of like the Newfoundland version with ballet, you know, instead of the traditional Ukrainian dance, you know, helping you out.
Hey man, I don't think I'm a good dancer, but I can dance. Like I got a little bit, but I got a good step touch, you know. It's like, you know.
Hey, thank you so much there coming on, Jake. I know you're heavy into preparing for this upcoming fight. I really appreciate you coming on. Of course, we're friends outside of just this podcast, so I really appreciate that we're able to touch base and just have a chat. And I'm wishing you the best of luck come Saturday, November 19th.
I appreciate you, Matt. Take care, my friend. And again, I really do appreciate the opportunity. When you reached out, I was like, well, when you started this whole thing, it was like, I can't wait for him to get me on because it's going to be pretty cool. And I love the format. I love how it's just honest stuff. And you're doing a great job, my friend. And I really appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate it. Take her easy.
You too, my friend.
And I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the podcast with Jake. I mean, Jake's a friend, first and foremost. And I'm really happy to see him get to this stage in his career where he's able to have a pro debut. Because I remember when we were training, I mean, we had always talked about this and we talked about his career. We talked about his story. And now I'm in a position where I like to talk to fighters about their stories. So it made sense to have him on, of course. But yeah, Jake is an open, honest, and kind individual. If you notice, he talked a lot about other people and how they were able to help him get where he is. And I know that that's not very common with a lot of people. A lot of people like to try and take all of the success to themselves. And that's something I really appreciate about Jake. He's very open and honest about, you know, where he got, how he got to where he is now. You know, he gave a lot of insight also into his relationship with his father. I thought that was probably one of the most realest parts of this episode, where he was just talking about the fact that his father was there throughout his whole, you know, career. And, you know, I don't think many dads would go and start taking a jiu-jitsu course with their kids and having that ability to then start your own school And you know, he's got the tattoo of his father's newfound jujitsu school on his chest. He holds it really close to his heart. I just thought it was really beautiful him talking about that. And yeah, so guys, if you enjoyed this episode, as always, if you're listening to it on your preferred podcasting platform, make sure to subscribe to it on there. You can also leave a rating out of 5 stars. Give whatever rating you think it's worth. And yeah, if you're watching this podcast, because it's a video podcast, if you're watching it on YouTube, you can actually give a like, comment, and share to this video. And it really helps us out as far as getting the message, the story out there. And then also you can subscribe there, so that way when a new episode comes out, you won't miss it. Of course, I always recommend people that they follow me on Instagram if they use Instagram, because at Good People Bad Intentions, because I like to post a lot about, you know, the future of the podcast. When new episodes are coming out, I put it on the Instagram page a lot. So I like to communicate a lot there. And if you're trying to get in the know as far as when new episodes are coming out, etc., I strongly recommend that you follow me on Instagram. So that's all, folks. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And until next time, take care.